там на горе, ой, там на кроте, ой, там сидела пара голубів, ой, там сидела пара голубів.
Welcome to episode 3 of Rerooting. Interviews with immigrant artists of Indianapolis. My name is Tiffany Black, and I'm a resident of Big Car Collaborative's Artist and Public Life Residency, a long-term artist housing program. Through this interview series, I'll be highlighting first-generation immigrants from all over the world who now call Indianapolis their home. Through our interviews, we explore their inspiration, the kind of creative work they make, how they bridged art practices across different cultures, and how they have created home in a new place. Our guest today is Irina Bondar, an artist and illustrator based in Indianapolis. Born and raised in Ismail, Ukraine, she went to art school at the age of 7, and at 15, she started drawing illustrations for clients around the world. Irina moved to the United States to pursue a degree in illustration at Heron School of Art. She graduated in 2019. In her words, "People close to me know me as an interdisciplinary artist, but I just like to keep my hands busy. I'm fascinated with Ukrainian folklore, and I stay connected with my culture, both old and contemporary." Since the full-scale invasion of Russia in Ukraine in 2022, Irina and her friends created a website of over 700 Ukrainian artists. It serves as a directory and allows people to purchase artwork directly from Ukrainian creators experiencing loss of their livelihood, and is completely free to use for both artists and buyers. You can find this fantastic resource at supportukrainianartists.org. Thank you so much for being with me today, Irina.
Thank you. Thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity.
So I know you live in Indianapolis now, but I was wondering if you could start by sharing your journey, telling us where you're from and when you came to Indy and your story.
Yeah, absolutely. I am a citizen of Ukraine. I am also a resident of Indiana. I was born in Ukraine, in South Ukraine, in a little town called Ismail. I went to school, went to art school. I started college there. And then some traumatic events happened with my family. My aunt passed away and we had to adopt two of her daughters. It was financially very straining on my family. And I was already going to college on a governmental funding, and some really distant relatives of ours, they offered to pay for my education to help my parents. They knew that I really wanted to pursue art, and that wasn't something that I could afford to do in Ukraine at the moment. So they offered me a certain amount of support. They helped me apply. They helped me go through different exams to enter. They offered me a couple of different options for universities, but ultimately I chose something where the program was the best fit for me, which was illustration at IUPUI, and I wanted to be in Indianapolis, which is where my relatives lived. I was only 18. I wasn't even 18 when we started prepping for this process, and I was really scared. I've never been anywhere. I've never lived in another city. I've always been next to my parents. I was always a home buddy. So I wanted to be somewhere close to people that I knew. When I was 18, I got my student visa and I arrived to Indy to pursue illustration at Heron School of Art. I went through 4 years in total with a break in between of education at IUPUI. And then I got really, really lucky. People don't actually usually get lucky twice as much as I have in my lifetime. But I won the green card lottery, if you've heard about the diversity visa. Mm-hmm. It was very random. And it was the first time I applied because I have just heard of people I know who have been applying for 6, 7, 10 years in a row and never getting a chance. And here I was, and it was my last year right before it was right on the end of my education where I would have to go back, go live back in Ukraine. When I got my residence card, basically it was 2 weeks before my graduation ceremony. Wow.
Very good timing too.
Yeah, it was very stressful. It was very stressful, and it was a very expensive process. At that point, I was already paying for the rest of my education from my, you know, on-campus job money and kind of having to borrow money for that whole process. Is very stressful, but I'm glad it happened.
Wow, congratulations. Yeah, that's a big deal. And I bet that was a big relief in a stressful time.
Yeah, it definitely was, because one of the biggest things that at the moment I was already thinking was that I moved to study in the United States when I was 18. All of my school friends or first college friends have moved on in their lives doing certain things, and I was not a part of their life anymore. All of them moved around Europe or Ukraine. I was really scared that I would have to restart my whole life again. I went to America, I had to restart my life. Then going back to Ukraine would mean that I would have to restart my whole life once again. And I already had so many friends here. I kind of feel like I have a family here now.
Yeah, I was going to ask how that transition has been for you. So you came to start a 4-year college program at IUPUI and you graduated.
Yes.
So how has that whole transition been for you, moving to Indianapolis and then now after graduation?
One of the biggest things that I kind of still experience a little bit less so now that I try to go to Ukraine at least once a year for multiple weeks or sometimes months at a time. The first thing was actually obviously the culture shock. Oh my God, everything is so much bigger here. This is something that I was amazed at first. And now it's something that I'm really annoyed with, how far away everything is. Streets are stupid big. Houses are unnecessarily big. So the first thing is the culture shock of like, wow, this looks completely different. And over time, you start really realizing that people are essentially, you know, the same. They just have a different background everywhere.
Was the town where you're from in Ukraine, is it small or what's the population just to compare?
It's 70,000 people. So technically it's a city. It's pretty big. I would say you could probably, it would take you like 4 hours. No, not four, 3 hours going from one end to another by foot. But cities in Ukraine and in Europe in general are way, way denser than in the US. So I would say it's a pretty big city, but by size comparing, it's a lot smaller.
Gotcha.
Probably a couple of neighborhoods here in Indy.
So it sounds like you've built a community here. Are you still in touch with your friends from Heron?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I try to keep up with a lot of my college friends. But one of the recent things that we've been doing, both me and my partner, we both graduated from Heron from the illustration program. And this is something that we've noticed in the last year of the art program. Heron, as probably any other art program in another university, kind of sets you up for this, you know, amazing life as an artist. You have your own studio, you have your own peers everywhere. You can come up to anyone, you can brainstorm cool ideas, you know, everybody's always next to you. And then you're out of it, there's nobody around you. Your closest college friend is 10 miles away, and you have to find a job and maybe see them once a year if you're lucky. So we got really, really lucky that some of our friends live really closely, and we kind of have been trying to intentionally live closer and closer to each other, if obviously we can afford it. But by closer, I mean like 2-3 blocks away from each other. And it has changed everything for me. I have had a horrible art block right after graduating Heron. And now every Saturday or Sunday, we gather in our little studio here with my friends, and whoever can come will come. But we just do art. Somebody paints, somebody draws, somebody, you know, brings some crafts project. And it kind of helps us relive that feeling of like being within a little community where you do things because everybody else is doing things. Mm-hmm. And you're not feeling the pressure of like, oh, I have to complete something. I have to, you know, I have to prove something. I have to create something and then show it to other people. You just do it because you like the process of making art.
Nice. And that's great that you've been able to continue your art practice.
Yeah.
What kind of art are you making?
I'm a watercolor illustrator, so that's pretty much my main medium. I also do a lot of, I do a little bit of everything pretty much. I have been really into embroidery recently. I do at least half of all of the fiber arts. I do paint with acrylic sometimes. I do a lot of drawing, inks, pretty much anything that strikes my fancy at the moment, but most of the times it's watercolor.
And I'll just point out that listeners can look at your work on your website, which is your name, irinabondar.com, IRYNAB as in boy, ONDAR. And we'll include a link to that too. Beautiful work. When did you start making art?
I started going to art school when I was 7, and in Ukraine, art schools work a little bit differently. I know that in some of the Eastern European and Central European Slavic countries, they have the same practice where you have one school curriculum, and then in order to get some sort of art education, you go into a completely separate place. Mm-hmm. And I wanted to go to an art school without really understanding what it was at 7. That's where my mom took me. It's about 10 hours a week of different art subjects like painting, drawing, art history, ceramics, and composition.
Wow. So you knew at 7 that you wanted to do art.
Yeah, but you know kind of how a 7-year-old will be like, I like painting.
Yeah.
So that's what I did. And when I was a teenager, I started hating it because it was just another thing that I had to do and another thing that where I had to go to. But my mom said that you will say thank you to me when you're older because I didn't let you quit. And she did not let me quit at any point of it, even though I skipped classes and I hated my teachers. But when I was 14, a couple of new girls joined our class, and it was their first year of going. And they were so much more into it. They were so into art history, learning about different painters, different movements. And they got me hooked on it. And that's where I became actually interested in art. Mm. I already had basics of academic drawing and painting in. So it really helped me propel that interest because I could already make something based on my skills, and then use the interest in newly acquired topics and create something new.
Nice. What are some of the main influences on the kind of art that you make?
You know, I always get asked this question, and I genuinely can never say anything other than people around me. I can't think of a single artist that, you know, would influence me other than my friends. When I see them doing something, it inspires me because it's achievable. When I see my friends succeeding, I think to myself, oh, they did this, so I can, you know, I can do it too. Mm-hmm. But in terms of influences, recently I've had some influences in terms of Ukrainian artists that I have been following through the last year and the full-scale invasion. It has been very eye-opening. A lot of writers, a lot of authors from 100, 200 years ago that have been writing about the same thing that's happening today, that's been happening for the past 200 years. And it has been very eye-opening to read their prose and poems, realizing that I never looked at their work the same way I'm looking at it right now, having lived through these same experiences. I guess that has been a big influence on me recently.
Has your work changed at all since the invasion happened?
I would say yes, because I think the first time when I arrived to the U.S., I didn't know what my work was about or was going to be about. And over the years, I realized that I want to create a lot of my work based on my heritage and my Ukrainian ancestry. And I think this year just solidified it. I think this year, I realized that there is a lot of things about my experience as an immigrant that I want to project onto my work. And I think that has been a big part of my work recently.
Mm. Can you talk more about that?
Yeah. I used to have a lot of hesitation about creating work that reflected my experience, because, you know, rationally, you know, your experience is unique, and, you know, it's always worth sharing. And I've always had that, you know, imposter syndrome of like, well, who cares? There's, you know, thousands of immigrants like me, and, you know, I don't think my story is that special to, you know, be talked about. But then I realized that I'm not really making art for other people necessarily. I'm making it for me. And if I'm going to create something and I'm going to be painting, I might as well talk about things that, you know, make me excited or make me, or, you know, things that I think are important.
Mm. Do you have maybe a recent work that you could describe for our listeners, something that you feel has been important or that you really wanted to express?
Yeah, I've recently been doing a lot. I've been going through a lot of photos that I've taken in my from the village that my grandparents are from. And mm-hmm. I've been doing a lot of landscapes based on that. And I've been brainstorming a lot of work kind of in my future plans to create a body of work based just on places that are dear to me. It's kind of simple, you know, southern Ukraine landscapes, you know, flat lands, a lot of water everywhere. My hometown is on the Danube River, and it's about 50 miles away from the Black Sea. So that's been a part of my childhood. In the first couple of months, I tried creating things that really felt, I tried transforming my feelings of just fear and frustration and anger through art. And I made a few pieces that were related. But then I saw that there were a lot of artists who do that same thing every single day. And I felt like I was appropriating their experience a little bit, having not lived exactly through, you know, shellings every single day and, you know, fear of not waking up next morning, despite, you know, me obviously creating work that was related to my experience. So I really focused on my project Support Ukrainian Artists, and that's what put me out of painting for quite a few months, because that was basically my second full-time job for a while.
Yeah, I wanted to ask you about that project. Will you tell us what that is?
Yeah, so Support Ukrainian Artists is a website that is a catalog of over 700 artists in every possible visual arts genre. And it contains artists from nationally and internationally renowned Ukrainian artists to single mothers that, you know, knit socks, or teenagers who do like digital drawings and make like tattoo sketches and things like that and sell them digitally because they just need some extra cash. And how it started, it was March, and again, I was trying to do some painting, and it just felt just excruciatingly difficult to put anything on paper. And one of the most amazing things that I have seen happening in my lifetime is how people in the first 3 months of war came together. And there was nothing, there was no, you know, oh, I don't know this person, I'm just protecting me, I'm just doing this for myself. Everybody came together. People started donating insane amount of money to every single cause. You know somebody who went on the front line and they need a helmet? Boom, all of your neighbors put a little bit of money together and they bought a helmet. Somebody needs tourniquets? You got the tourniquets. You know that there's an old lady who doesn't have any food because her children fled or something happened to them. She will never need food again because somebody brought 200 kilograms of potatoes to her door or something like that. It was really crazy how people just pulled together and everybody knew what they had to do. People didn't have jobs. Half of the people didn't have jobs immediately. And that half either went and volunteered to territorial defenses or to help get transport things, move things to occupied territories, move people out of those territories, just fundraising, you know. And that was one of the things. It felt like art wasn't helping, and I needed to do something that would actually help. And it was only natural that I did something for artists, because if I was there, I would immediately not have a job. I would immediately, it's not, art is a luxury. Art is not a necessity in times of war. So I wanted to do something. And this project kind of reflects my own views as well. I wanted to create something where people can connect personally to the artist instead of transferring their money through some other entity. That's why this is a catalog. It's not a website where you can purchase things. Every single artist has links to their Instagram, to their website, to their shop, wherever. I think a lot of people are weary about donating, large corporations not really knowing where exactly that money will go, mm-hmm. or they don't want, you know, their money to be used as a tax write-off. Just because one company decided to do something good for once.
So listeners can find that at supportukrainianartists.org. And could you tell it? So it's a catalog. Could you tell us more about how it works? I see there's a different tile for each individual artist that you can click on and it takes you to their site. Is that right?
So on the very first page, there is a search bar and there are little taglines for different types of art. There's fine art, there is jewelry, there is woodwork, things like that. And there's also three number tiles that indicate the price range if you have a price preference or a budget. And you can click on either of them and it will narrow down the 700 artists that we have on the website and will show you the selection of those specific artists. And when you click on that tile, it will give you a little bit of a description about the artist. It tells you where they're from in Ukraine, where they are right now. Granted, people have filled this out in April, May, and throughout the year. So their current location may have changed over time. Mm-hmm. And we physically can't track every single person. Then there's their price range for their work. And then there is their Instagram handle where you can find them. Mm. At the bottom, there is a description or something that they submitted about their story, about what they do, and how you can help them, whether it's their website or, again, purchase their work through their Instagram.
And so if somebody wants to purchase artwork from one of these artists, they would go through the artist directly. Is that right?
Yes. We have given artists a lot of guidance on how to sell, which payment services are better to use. We have given instructions on how to package your artwork properly, how to fill out the declarations to ship your artwork, what expectations should the buyers have, that sort of thing. We even made a little dictionary guide for the main terms.
That's great. Use. So you're also doing a little bit of coaching.
Yes.
To help them, like maybe to make more sales.
Yeah.
That's great. How did you build this? I think I can put together how you got the idea. Mm-hmm. What was that like? What, when you came up with the idea and how did you start developing this?
I initially wanted to find, you know, people I knew who I could help, maybe 20, 30 people. When I made a post about it on Instagram among my friends, it kind of got shared to a few people I didn't know. So I thought, well, maybe we could get 50 to 70 artists. And I made a bigger post on my professional art page. And from there, it kind of went viral. It had thousands of people reposting it. So my initial idea, it kind of like a Squarespace website where I can fill everything out myself, flopped. And I had a developer friend who really wanted to do something. He basically just made the whole website from scratch completely in a week. And that's how we got here.
Correct me if I'm wrong. It looks like there are 672 artists featured on this.
Yes.
That's a lot. So it started out just with people who you knew personally, mm-hmm. and then just went from there. Okay. How did you go about collecting all the information from these artists?
We built a Google form. We got people to fill out a Google form. And then we had to transfer all of that data into the website. And my friend Tom, who built the website, he made the back end kind of very straightforward, line by line. You just copy and paste things. But mm-hmm. in order to enter one artist, it can take between 7 to 15 minutes. So we needed just manpower. Mm-hmm. I just made a post on the Support Ukrainian Artists webpage or Instagram page, and asked if anybody wanted to volunteer a couple of hours. And we had a lot of volunteers that I trained to do this. My partner helped me check every single page for mistakes and fix them. And that's how we got all of them up on the website.
People can also follow on Instagram, support Ukrainian artists, that's artists plural, as well as the website. And this is an amazing initiative. It looks like it probably took a lot of legwork to build this. Do you have any idea of how many transactions have happened because of this platform that you've built?
We can't tell for sure, but I know that without any advertising and without anything external, because right now I just don't have time to put any work into it specifically to advertise it. I know that every day we have an average of 100 unique visitors. That means 100 unique visitors that spend multiple minutes browsing through it. If every single day that leads to at least one sale, that's already a win. But I know for a fact that just across my friends that I know of who told me about the purchases they made and their neighbors told them about, there's definitely a few thousands of dollars that went through. I know myself, I have used it to purchase about $3,000 worth of stuff. It's where I've been getting all of my Christmas gifts and birthday gifts pretty much for the past year.
Yeah, you're going to buy Christmas gifts or a birthday gift for somebody anyways. Why not put that money to supporting somebody who's been displaced and, you know, could really use that extra cash? And there are beautiful things on this website, all handmade. There's jewelry, paintings. This is incredible. It's a huge accomplishment.
Thank you. I know that a lot of people who are interested in helping out somehow are worried that their help is not going to be enough. There is actually one Instagram post that we are about to make soon about how $20 actually makes a huge difference for Ukrainian, even though $20 would mean absolutely nothing here. The economy difference is insane. And despite the prices going doubling and tripling over the last year, the economy difference is really huge. And for $30, you could feed one person for probably a week solidly. We are about to make a post about exactly breaking down the price of basic food items and how a $20 purchase would help very much sufficiently to another person. So not to be shy. There's a saying in Ukrainian right now, there is no small donation.
Mm. Yeah,
everything matters.
That's great to keep in mind. I did have a couple of other questions specifically about your artwork.
Absolutely.
If it's okay to go back to that for a minute.
Mm-hmm.
I was really curious to hear about this piece that you made. I saw it on your website. It's called Greetings from, and I am going to pronounce this
from
wrong.
Lubavitka. Yeah.
Yes. Could you describe this piece to our listeners and tell us what this is about?
Yeah, it's a satirical piece. It's a painting with two hands kind of levitating a missile in between them. It's one of the anti-air missiles, actually. So okay. Technically, it wouldn't be one of the missiles that would be flying there. It's one of the ones that's protecting our cities from Russian missiles every day. And the saying means greetings from Chernobyl. This painting was done, I believe, in either March or April of 2022. And it was kind of, as funny as you can be when we're talking about, you know, killing. Mm-hmm. But the situation was that one of the occupied territories, which is Kherson Oblast, it has been occupied since pretty much day one, and a little town called Chernobyl has had an interesting situation there where Russian troops kept putting their just their equipment and their troops there. And day after day, every single time, we kept attacking and destroying everything that was on that base that they set up there. And it was kind of a joke between Ukrainians, just counting how many times are they going to make that stupid mistake over and over again. Mm. And at the same time, there was also a big thing about, I don't remember exactly which town it was from, but I believe it was from the north of Ukraine, where there was a lady who cursed Russian troops by saying that she was, don't you know that women from our town are witches and will curse you so that you will never, you know, have children or something like that. And there was a lot of, you know, it was kind of a big movement of doing work about Ukrainian witches and things like that. So it was two topics merged together.
Ah, I see the witchiness. The hands have these like long fingernails that look incredibly sharp. And there's these eyes that are glowing in the darkness and they're like glinting in the light. And what is the text on the missile?
It says, "Greetings from Chernobyl."
Gotcha.
It's another nod to, in the beginning of war, a lot of missiles that would arrive in Ukraine from Russians would have really horror, gruesome things written on them, you know, basically like death wishes. Mm-hmm. So it was kind of a nod to that.
Mm-hmm. I love your use of color with, is this watercolor?
Yes, it's watercolor, and black is pretty much all ink because there's no way I can get that black in watercolor.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, I love the colors that you use in your watercolor pieces. There's another one called Opera Pink. That's a portrait of a woman or a girl. Is there a story behind that one?
Not really, other than I really, really had a craving to paint with pink. Mm-hmm. I really love Oprah Pink. Mm-hmm. And, I kind of have two color palettes. It's either red with black or it's pink with green. I've recently started working on an illustration series, and I'm trying to build out a story as I paint them. There's a lot of green and pink in it. I just can't get over how much I love it over years.
Well, the colors are fantastic, and I feel like, especially with these recent paintings, your color use is really vibrant and passionate. Like, can you see this?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is there a title for this piece?
I couldn't really think of a title. I just was in a lot of distress, and I needed an outlet, so I really didn't find a title for that piece.
It's kind of a close-up of two faces, and they very much look like they're in pain or anguish, or it's a really full of emotion. And I get a similar kind of reaction to this one. Could you describe this one for us?
So that one was a portrait of a woman. It was basically a self-portrait, but I tried making myself look much older, because that's how I felt in the moment. I just felt hundreds of years older. This happened right after the first war crimes in Bucha became known to the public, and the information about how many women, men, and children have been sexually abused and then killed by Russian troops. It felt a little bit like defeat in terms of just sanity and adequacy of trying to rationalize things. Up to that point, you know, I was angry, but I tried to rationalize, like, well, you know, this can't really be happening. This can't be as bad as it is. You know, there's people there who, you know, don't support this. They'll do something. And no, then nobody did. And then this happened. And that was kind of the turning point for me, where I realized that I don't think of them as humans anymore. And I don't think that they deserve to be thought of as humans. And I, that piece was specifically to commemorate women that suffered from violence during this war and really any other war.
The piece is, it's a figure of, it looks like a woman. She's got this really, really emotionless, kind of like a stone cold stare. There's a lot of red washes over her face, and over, she's wearing this white fabric that goes over her head, and it looks like a long robe. Behind her is a circular, bright red circular pattern, and then it kind of looks like, correct me if I'm wrong, but it looks like it's kind of turning into blood and coming down onto the fabric.
Yeah, I think what I was thinking when I was painting it was, you know, those depictions of Mother Mary, and, you know, her always wearing her blue robe and having a halo behind her, and going through this spectrum of feelings when you don't yourself feel human anymore, for how much anger and despair you have. That's kind of how I felt, like I myself wasn't feeling like a human anymore either.
Well, her expression is really fascinating because she's very stoic, but she's also kind of looking up. Her eyes are open and looking up. So it does feel like there is some strength and resilience and maybe like a little glimmer of hope, just purely looking at her eyes. Yeah, thanks for sharing that with us. This whole series, if you go to Irina's website, it's under the illustration tab, and you can look at all of these pieces that we're discussing. And yeah, there's a lot of emotion behind these. And thank you for sharing that with us. I know it's not easy.
Thank you. I didn't think that I would really ever talk about these again, but it's nice to kind of remind myself the story behind those.
Mm-hmm. Well, thank you so much for sharing about those. Yeah, your work is really powerful, and I'm so glad that you're sharing it with the world.
Thank you.
So where else can listeners find your work?
The best way to find my work and connect with me is through my Instagram page. It's Irina S. Bondar, IrynaS Bondar. That's pretty much where I do most of my art-related updates.
Great. Thank you so much for speaking with me today and sharing about your work, your story, and your initiative Support Ukrainian Artists.
Thank you so much for inviting me. This is the first time I've had an opportunity to speak on a radio station, so I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Irina.
Thank you so much.
This has been a production of 99.1 WQRT, an art and community project of Big Car Collaborative. Rerouting, interviews with immigrant artists of Indianapolis, will air every second Saturday at 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Thanks for tuning in.